Being a ministry wife is a vocation without a job description. And let's be honest, sometimes it seems like ministry might be easier if we did have one. If you are a ministry wife like me and are looking for hope, perspective, and a little bit of practical advice regarding your role, you're in the right place. Hi, I'm Christine Hoover, author of How to Thrive as a Pastor's Wife. Welcome to the Ministry Wives Podcast, a production of the North American Mission Board. Join me as we hear from women from various ministry contexts having authentic conversations about our shared joys and challenges, even the ones we're unsure we can talk about. No topic is off limits. Today, my guest is Angie Brown Elkins. Angie is a podcaster, a mom of three college kids, and wife to a worship pastor for 27 years. She is also the manager of the Lifeway Podcast Network. Angie joins me today to share the joys and challenges of being a worship pastor's wife and to discuss how she has found her place in her local church and in her own ministry. Sometimes, for various reasons, finding our place of service can be challenging as pastor's wives. Angie gives great insight on what the Lord has taught her as she has found her current place of ministry. Here, friends, is my conversation with Angie Elkins. It's so super fun to have Angie Brown Elkins on the podcast. Welcome, Angie.
Thank you. It's so good to be here. It's really an honor for me. I think you told me I'm the first worship pastor's wife to be on the show.
Yes, you are. And we're going to talk. I want to talk some about that. But before we do, I would love for you to introduce yourself to my listeners. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Happy to. So as I mentioned, I am married to Robert Elkins, and he is the worship pastor at our church, First Baptist Orlando, where we have been for almost 14 years. Actually, by the time this airs, we will have celebrated 14 years of ministry at this church.
Wow.
I know. So that's a long time, and especially for a worship pastor, it's a long time. But we've been fortunate to serve really in two full-time ministries our entire career. And so that's been really a blessing to us. But we do live in Orlando, Florida. We have three kids and they're all in college.
Wait, three
kids in college.
All three are in college?
All three are in college right now.
What years?
Would you like me to send you my Venmo? So if anybody wants to. Okay. So my oldest is a senior and it's actually his fifth year. So that kind of explains it a little bit. But my oldest is a senior. He's at Liberty University and having the time of his life. It's amazing. My middle is 21 and she is doing community college online here in Orlando, which is her jam from home. That's her thing. And then my youngest is a freshman at UCF, a University of Central Florida, also very close to home. He lives at home, goes to UCF, and that's what he wanted to do. So it's fun.
Yeah.
We have lots of teams we're pulling for.
Yeah. And well, you have three in college, but then you said, when you said that, like you have two at home still. So it's kind of like this in between, not quite empty nesting, I guess.
Yeah, definitely not. I feel like I'm a long way from that. I have one who won't leave home until we force her to, which is actually fine with me.
Okay.
Because she's cool.
Yeah, that's good. Okay, so you did mention you are the first worship pastor's wife, I think, that I can remember on the podcast. And I would love for you to share from that perspective in terms of like, what are the challenges? What are the unique challenges you think worship pastor's wives navigate? And what are those joys that you're navigating?
It is a really unique challenge. And, you know, as I thought about this question, it's really changed a lot over the years, because when we first got in full-time ministry in worship world, the worship wars was still a thing.
Yeah.
You know, I think it probably still is in some churches. We're not experiencing it the way that we did when we first started. And so that was hard because it feels so personal when people are, you know, bringing their preferences into church services and their worship services, and really kind of attacking, was the music good? I mean, saying things like that, you know, when that, I think this is a unique challenge for worship pastors and of course their wives in general, is that a lot of people don't have the language to talk around about worship or what's happening in worship. And so they say things like, the music's not good, or I didn't like the music, you know, and that's so hard. People, I don't know, do people say, I don't like the preaching, or I didn't like the sermon? I guess they do.
Maybe some, but I feel like this is something that worship pastors absorb more than anybody mm-hmm. else on staff, because everyone has an opinion or a preference when it comes to music.
Yeah, it's so true. I've heard it said before, this is not original to me by any means, but if you were to survey the congregation at any moment and ask them what radio stations they listen to, you know, what music do you listen to on the regular, you would have a vast array of differences throughout your congregation. But that's one of the things that makes worship itself so unique. And I'll even say the music portion of worship, because it is all of us putting aside our preferences and coming together with one unified voice to sing the same song. And so it's really such a beautiful thing. And so it requires a lot of education, you know, of the congregation for them to understand this really isn't about what we prefer or what we want or what we would choose. It's about choosing something together for the community. Mm-hmm. And so, I think that has been a consistent challenge throughout worship ministry. And then, of course, as wives married to, you know, the guys making these decisions and calls, and I know this is the same for all pastors' wives, we know what goes into the planning and the execution and the, you know, the prayerfulness and the seeking the Lord. And so for the criticism to come after all of that, it just feels so silly at times, you know, and it's hard to not take it personal. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so I would say that has been one of the challenges, but also the joys. I mean, it's just, music is fun, right?
Yes,
so it's just fun. And it's part of my calling as well, which we'll talk about, I'm sure. But I love singing in the choir. I love singing on the team. I love, you know, getting to be behind the scenes and tell my husband about my favorite new Christmas song that I heard that came out, or maybe it gets worked into a service. I mean, you just never know. Oh, and so yeah. Like being part of that is really fun. And experiencing that together.
Yeah.
So yeah.
That's good. Well, I want to ask for the worship pastors' wives listening, because they're all wondering, how do you handle the criticism? Because I'm sure you hear the same things over and over, or your husband tells you that people are saying these things over and over. And that's got to be hard, because you don't, as pastors' wives, we don't necessarily have the mic to say, let me educate you, like the things you just said.
Right.
You can't really say those things. So how do you handle the criticism?
Yeah. You know, I heard recently my friend Nicole Zazowski, I don't know if you know Nicole. Guys, I commend her book to everyone listening. It's called What If It's Wonderful? And she talks about really celebration in that book, and how do we learn to celebrate? But one of the things that she has taught me is that really anytime someone is behaving badly or inappropriately, even if it's complaining about something at church, it's coming from a place of pain mm-hmm. in them. And so for me to stop and just remember, this is really not about me, and it's not about my husband. It's really about something going on inside of them. That helps me sort of put it in its proper place and in the right perspective. But it is still really hurtful, especially when there are things like said, like the music is not good. I mean, that's just not true. You know, so there are things that I think we have to remind ourselves are true in this situation. And then there are things like music that are very relative. You know, people do, opinions are relative, and they do not, they are not a matter of fact. And so we have to remind ourselves what is the truth in this situation, and what is up for opinion. And most of the time it's opinion. And as I said, it's just helpful for me to remember that these people are reacting out of a place of pain, and just to ask God to give us eyes to see how we can help ease that pain,
yeah.
whatever it is, you know. And most of the time, people just need to be heard.
Yes.
Yeah. And so listening and agreeing with them that we hear them is great.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good. Well, I also want to know about, I have had a lot of listeners ask this question. They say they want to hear from somebody who's not a senior pastor's wife, mm-hmm. and they want help finding their place in the church as, let's say, a youth pastor's wife or a worship pastor's wife. How have you, or what would you say to a woman like that who is trying to figure out where she fits?
Mm. Listen, I have been through this and I understand. When we were at First Baptist Euless, which is where we spent really the first half of our ministry at this point in our lives, we spent almost 15 years there. And I was really involved in children's choir. That was my place. I sang in the choir. I sang on the worship team and I loved children's choir. I started preschool choir there and it was my thing, right? That was it. That's what I did. Well, we moved to Orlando and there was already someone doing that here and they were doing a great job. In fact, probably even better than what we had going on at my old church. And so I knew there was no way I was going to step in and do the same thing that I had done there because I wasn't needed. I think that is probably the hardest thing to face, is that you might not be needed in whatever capacity you were needed before. Mm-hmm. And so that was really hard for me. But I'll tell you a story. I really spent a lot of time probably grieving the loss of my place in ministry when we moved to Orlando, because not only was children's choir and preschool choir not a place for me to serve, the way our services were planned, we had like three different things going on. It's kind of complicated, but I couldn't serve in my normal spot. Like even in the choir every Sunday didn't make sense for me. Uh-huh. So I was struggling all the way around. And I can remember one day my youngest son came in. So he was probably about 5 or 6 at this point. And he had not learned to ride his bike yet. He was completely happy with his Razor scooter. And he would ride that all the time. And we had gotten him a bike for Christmas. He had no interest in it. And one day I backed off over that Razor scooter with my car by accident. No. Okay.
Yeah.
And I didn't tell him. I just kind of like hit it. And I thought, he won't remember. Right. Or he won't know. Well, one day he went out to ride that Razor scooter and found it. And he was so upset. He was like laying on the ground, like full body throwing a fit. Right. And then he sat up and he went, oh, I'm going to learn to ride my bike. And he got that bike out and his older brother got out there with him, rode up and down the sidewalk because he was a little bit older. He learned it really fast and he was off. He was going, riding that bike. And that same day I was standing at the stove, stirring a pot of noodles, like making dinner, crying. About not having my place in ministry and not just feeling so lost and empty and like, what am I going to do? And nobody's going to help me. Like, I've just got to figure this out. And I felt like God just said to me, what else do you want to do? Like, what have you always wanted to do and you've never had the opportunity to do it? And I started thinking about how I always wanted to write a children's musical. And so I started thinking, maybe I should do that. And so there were a couple of writers at our church who had been writing partners for a while. I went to them and I gave them this idea and they were like, yes, let's do it. And I'm telling you, that became a new thing for me. We probably wrote 7 musicals over the next. Yeah, it was so much fun. And then in the summer, we would put the musicals up with kids in the church. And it was, so I was still getting to do kids' music. Mm-hmm. But I was just doing it in a different capacity. I just started something new. And that is a gift that I have. I do love to pioneer things. I love to start new things. And so I would just say this to someone struggling to find their place. God will let you serve him if you will just say yes to whatever he's asking. Mm-hmm. And it will look completely different maybe at times. you just have to be willing to let go of your idea of what it's going to look like. Yeah. If you want to serve him, you can.
Yes.
That's it.
That's so true.
That's it. You just have to find the way that's going to work. And maybe it's just dreaming up something new and asking somebody to come alongside you and join you in it, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. But that's how it looked for me. But I've had to reinvent myself several times over the years. And that was just the first one.
Yeah.
But yeah, so.
Well, you and I have talked in the past about, this is what I call sidekick syndrome, where mm-hmm. it's kind of like, oh, two for one, the pastor's wife, she's going to kind of be or do what he does. She's going to kind of go along with him. But sometimes as pastor's wives, we feel called to our own thing. Yeah. And we're still supportive and encouraging our husband, but we feel called to something separate, kind of alongside him, but different. Mm-hmm. But sometimes there can be some constraints on that for us in ministry, especially if our desire is to serve in the same church.
Yeah.
And so I would love for you to speak to that about how you've experienced what I'm calling sidekick syndrome.
Yeah. Yeah. So I will say, you know, my husband and I met at seminary. We were both at Southwestern Seminary getting our music degrees because we both wanted to serve the local church in the worship ministry. I never dreamed in a million years that that would not work out. I actually thought this is going to be great. Like, there's going to be a church that will love hiring both of us. Mm. What I didn't realize, especially serving in a traditional setting that, I say traditional, what I really mean is usually more established churches are a little less open to hiring both a husband and a wife, especially in the same department. Yeah. And there are a lot of reasonable things that go on. You know, there are reasons.
Yes. Yeah.
And so I get that, but it just did not occur to me. And so I was actually blessed when we were at First Baptist Euless to serve alongside my husband. We actually even shared an office. Now, he was not the worship pastor there for a long time. He eventually became the worship pastor, but before he was an associate and I was the children's choir coordinator, and we shared an office, and that was so much fun. And then when we came to First Orlando, I was contracted to serve on the music team, but I was not an official part of the team. And that was just kind of a workaround for, you know, hiring two people on the same staff. But as time went on, and we were in kind of an unhealthy situation with some leadership issues that have since changed. So it's not like this here anymore. But there was a point that came where they were no longer going to allow me to serve and be paid on the music team. And that was extremely hard for me because that's where I felt like my calling was, you know, that's why I went to seminary, and it was the love of my life. Like, I love serving in music ministry and planning and all of that. And so that has been a very difficult thing for me. And I know that we've talked before probably, and I know on the Glass House, the show I produce for Ben and Lindley Mandrell, we talk about pastors' wives and how they're often assumed that they will carry part of the workload, but they are not often compensated for what they do. And so I needed a job, and I was trained in church music.
That's right.
That was it.
Yeah.
I had a master's degree, you know? And so it was just a whole thing for me to really start rethinking, how can I still do ministry and serve, but also have a job, you know? So that's been the hard thing for me. I am still serving in music ministry. I would say at my church, there's not an expectation on me that I have to do anything. So if I were to walk away from music ministry tomorrow, I would be loved and missed, but nothing would stop, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
there's no expectation on me. Yeah. Like, no one puts that there. But I don't walk away because it's one of my ways that I taste and see that the Lord is good, yeah. you know, by doing that. Yeah. And so, Really, I started my podcast in an effort to find a ministry that was more of the side-by-side ministry instead of the sidekick.
Yes.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. And I do want to say, not every pastor's wife is going to feel this. You know, there's some people listening who are like, I'm totally fine with, you know, I don't feel compelled that I need to start something or be a part of something separate. And that's totally fine. But I do think the less talked about thing is that there are pastor's wives who feel just as called to ministry and lead, you know, for me, I'm the same. I went to seminary. I was called to ministry before I met my husband.
Yeah.
And so it can be really, there's a tension that we feel, women like us, and you're giving voice to that. And I felt it too. And so I'd love to know, you know, the whole time you were talking, I was thinking about the Razor scooter and how it got run over. So that idea got run over.
Yeah.
So how did you start riding the bike? Like, walk us through that in the mm-hmm. process with your husband too, of talking mm-hmm. these things through. How'd you do that?
Well, he's been obviously super supportive. And, you know, the first bike I rode was children's musicals. The second bike I rode was podcasting, which I'm still riding that bike. But he's just always been very understanding and supportive. And I think because we are in a larger church context where there are lots of people eager and willing to step in to roles that maybe I was filling before, it wasn't really a question of what are we going to do if you step away. So that was okay. And he more than anything wanted me to feel like I was doing something that God was leading me to do, because he understood that I don't want to use the word stolen, but it did feel like something had been stolen from me in a way, like a dream or even a calling. I would even say a calling. Like, I felt like I'd been robbed of what I wanted to do in my calling and what I'd trained for. But I will tell you that I've rethought my language around calling since then, because really what I was saying was, if this is my calling, if this is what God has called me to do and man can stop it, is it really of God? Mm. And so what I realized was, our calling is not necessarily to a place or a person or even an exact thing, but it's really more to the things that all of us are called to as believers, making disciples, loving God with all our heart, soul, mind, and strength, loving our neighbors, ourselves. Those are our callings, and we can do those in lots of different ways. But what might change is our assignment and the way that that looks. And just as we said, I went from riding, you know, the Razor scooter to riding the bike, and now I'm on a different bike. My assignment's changed multiple times throughout my ministry, and I'm okay with that. And I think it's because I know that my more ultimate calling is still being fulfilled, and no one can thwart that. Like I said, if we want to serve the Lord, we can do that. Mm-hmm. It's just the assignment and the way it looks is going to change. So
I love that.
And I will tell you, you know, my husband was very supportive. He is a like kind of a techie, you know, he's a worship pastor. He does all the tracks and builds all that stuff for our services. And I knew that he could probably be supportive in the way of helping me figure out podcasting, but I didn't really want to ask that of him because he had a job already. And I really wanted to learn it myself. And so, I did, but it's funny because it's come full circle and he's now editing my podcast. Isn't that funny?
Oh, that's awesome.
I know. It's so funny.
I think that I love what you just said. It's so true. Sometimes I have looked at the constraints as someone's holding me back from what I should be doing. But really, I look back now and I think those constraints were refining my motives and showing me what was important and what wasn't. And would I serve if no one, you know, if I don't have a role or a title or no one sees it or applauds it? And all of those things were refined in the constraints. Mm. And I think of maybe a young youth pastor's wife who feels constraints because she doesn't want to overstep the senior pastor's wife mm-hmm. in the church. But really, you know, in some ways that can be refining, but it can, what you're saying is so true. You can make disciples no matter what you're doing, whether you have yes. a title or not, whether you're this, you feel seniority or not in the church, mm-hmm. it really doesn't matter. There's mm-hmm. going to be some difficulty with that, mm-hmm. but in the end, it's revealing your heart and showing you your motives and showing you what you really feel called. Like I felt like in that time, it really refined my calling too, of like, what do I really want?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. I mean, I definitely went through that. Like it, you know, I think it's Augustine, that quote from Augustine that says, love God with your whole heart and do as you please or something like that. I may have butchered it, but that's basically it. It's like, give him your life, give him your heart, and then just do what you please as long as you belong to him. Right. And so that was really freeing to me, just knowing, okay, then what I'm going to do is going to honor and serve him and the cause that I've been called to, no matter what, whether it's podcasting or children's choir or singing on the worship team or singing in the choir, whatever it is, you know? So yeah, I would say that's really freeing. I want to say this too. I am, because I'm in a larger church context, you may feel this too. The things that I choose to do or the ways that I choose to serve, they really are because I want to do them, or I feel God is saying, this is where your doors open, because there is no one who is watching. And here's what I mean. I don't know. I feel like there are probably women who are in larger church contexts who have expectations on them as, you know, pastor's wife of 50 pastors or whatever, you will show up to this and you will do this. You're expected to sit in this area on Sunday. I'm sure there are people like that. My church is not like that. There is no expectation on me. So if I didn't go to church for a year, my friends would miss me, but no one in leadership would necessarily notice, if that makes any sense. Yeah. And it's not that they don't care. It's just not their concern, you know? And so it has to be because I want to be there. It is one of the ways I experience God. That's why I go to church and that's why I serve church. It's not at church. It's not because of anyone else or what they will think, right, or, you know?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay. So what bike are you riding now? You got on a different bike.
Yes. So I'm on the podcasting bike now. And really that started in 2017. As a way to look for a ministry outlet, you know, and I thought I was going to turn that into my job, my full-time job. I wanted to live that podcaster life, you know, running ads on my shows and making a full-time income, paying for college. That was the plan. And I realized, you know, I set a 2-year goal. I would set I would release an episode every week.
Okay.
2 years. And I realized about 18 months in, I'm probably not going to have enough listeners to monetize this into a full-time job. And so I need to pivot. And so I started helping other people start their shows. And it went from, you know, just one small author with a small show to who told someone about me to who told someone else. And somehow I ended up editing the president's podcast at Lifeway.
Right. So
there's a lot more to the story, but so I started working with Ben and Lindley Mandrell. I started their show with them, which has just been awesome. And also, who but God, this podcast that they do, it's called The Glass House, and all of your listeners should know about it. You've been on.
Yes, it's a great podcast.
It's a great show, and it's for pastors and ministry wives. And the fact that I get to serve the local church with the big C, the church big C. I mean, who but God could orchestrate that? You know, it's just such a miracle to me. But anyway, so I work with Ben and Lindley. I, for years, was contracting with other people too. I got to work with amazing podcasts like Your Enneagram Coach. I was also on Jamie Ivey's team working on the happy hour and with her network for over a year. And so just a lot of crazy, amazing things came out of the fact that I was willing to get on a different bike and do something different. And so now I'm actually full-time at Lifeway. I am the manager of the Lifeway Podcast Network, and I work with all of the shows that Lifeway puts out that are for ministry leaders. So it's a dream.
Yeah.
It's not even a dream. I didn't even know this bike existed.
Yeah, exactly.
Much less did I know I could ride it. So it's crazy.
So Angie, I'm wondering, with all that we've talked about, what you would say to a woman who is feeling kind of stuck, like she's maybe feels buried, or she feels this compulsion, but not sure, by the Lord, but not sure where to go from there. What would you say to her about place?
That's such a good question. I think that where I usually go is, and this has a lot to do with my personality, but I like a challenge. Okay. So there are different areas of my life I have felt stuck in over the years, you know, whether it's ministry related, whether it's making a health change in my life. That was a big thing for me this year that I just needed to get unstuck in. I would say really maybe challenge yourself to doing something outside of the box or something different. And even if it's something as simple as, I'm going to try a new ministry in the church to get involved in. Maybe you've never sung in the choir before and you've never even thought of yourself as a singer, but you're like, I love music, so why not give it a try? You know, like whatever it is, or maybe serving in children's ministry. I've been thinking a lot about that lately. Like for some reason, God keeps bringing that to my mind. And so I'm just sort of praying on it. Is that where I need to be? Like, I've got a lot of stuff going on right now, but for whatever reason, God's bringing that to my mind. So I'm praying on that. But I would say, challenge yourself to do something you have not done before and commit to it. I think that's the part where we get lost, is we try it like once and maybe it's not amazing. And so we don't go back again, or we don't try it a third or fourth time. But I would say, like, say to yourself, I'm going to do this for 10 weeks, whatever it is, whether it's a new Bible study or teaching a new class or some kind of leadership that you maybe are missing. If that's your void, if that's your place that you normally are leading in, just think of a lead in some different way and be open. Be open to God doing something different in your life. And I will tell you this, even with podcasting, you know, I mentioned that I wanted to monetize my podcast and turn that into my job and my ministry. It didn't work that way. I had to go from being the person out front that everyone saw as the personality to saying, okay, I'm going to actually help you do that to someone else instead of being that person. This has happened to me over and over and over in music ministry. There's always a better singer. There's always somebody who's more gifted in whatever area. And being willing to say, maybe I'm not the one that should be up front here. I maybe am the one who knows best how to support the up front person, because I've been there. We have an amazing worship leader at our church who's one of my very best friends. And one year, she was singing a solo at Christmas that I had sung the year before. Okay? But she was given this solo. And just to be honest, she's way better than me. Okay? Way. And I needed to help her because she had like a quick change or something. And I was like, you know what? Here's what I'm going to help her with. She has long hair like me. And I was like, I'm going to help her get her shoes on, because I know with that dress, bending over, trying to buckle those shoes and get on stage, and you're sweating and you've got to sing a song and come out composed and look all together, I'm going to help her with her shoes. Mm-hmm. And this was not a spiritual decision, guys. I know it sounds really humble, but I was just thinking, what could I do to make it easier for her? I'm going to do that. And it was like in the moment I realized what I was doing. I didn't even realize it when I decided. It was like when I was down on my knees, buckling her shoes to go out on that platform for her to sing a song I had sung before, I realized this is where I was needed. Hmm. And so I just stepped into that need. And so be willing, just be willing to do whatever it is. It may be less glamorous. It may not fulfill some kind of vision that you have for yourself, but stepping into an empty gap where you are needed is really, I feel like, what God would say is where he finds pleasure in what you're doing. You're serving him.
Yeah.
And so I don't know. That's not very fun, but
buckling shoes. Okay. Buckling shoes. But yeah, that's really good. I like how you're making us think about it's not about role or position. It's just about serving wherever the Lord gives you opportunity. And so one last question comes to mind when you said that is what you're saying takes risk. For a young pastor's wife who's not the senior pastor's wife to go to the senior pastor's wife and say, I want to help you with this, or how can I help you with this? Or I want to start something that takes, that's risky. And there's a lot of complicated layers to that when our husbands are working for the church. And so what would you say to us about risk, taking risk by faith?
Gosh, you asked some hard questions. So I'm not risk averse. So like personality wise, I kind of am like, just go for it. Yeah. You know, I do want you to take a hard look at what the risk is, though, because it may not be exactly what you're imagining. It may be, I risk hurting someone's feelings, or I risk overstepping. Overstepping is something I definitely have to be careful of. And so I'm always aware of it. So I would say really talk through with a close friend or your husband, what are the risks? What legitimately are they?
Yeah.
How big are they? And am I being really honest about that? If fear is what's holding you back, that's just not of God. So I wouldn't worry about that. But I do understand, like, not wanting to overstep or even give someone an impression of you that's not true, right? Like, you're there to serve. That's all you care about. But sometimes I guess it could look like we're trying to muscle our way in or something. We're never going to be able to control what people say about us or how they perceive us. But I think when we walk forward, no matter what we're doing, with a level of humility, that goes a long way.
Yeah.
A humble spirit goes a really, really long way. So I would even pray about, God, just let me exude humility in this situation as I approach it. And go that way. Yeah. Just go that way and walk in confidence that that's something that God's maybe saying, give this a try. Let's just see what happens.
Yeah.
And be willing for it to go different. You know, as I said before, I don't even want to say fail, because I just see failure so differently. I think that failure is such a great learning tool. And sometimes when we fail, it just promotes us on to the next thing. So, I guess that's what, is that good?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, no, that's really good. Okay. So where can we find you? You mentioned your podcast. So tell us where we can find you.
Okay. I'm so excited. So by the time you guys hear this, I will have really a new show. It's called Let It Shine with Angie Elkins. And it's all about really walking through a process of sanctification and learning what it really looks like for us to completely die to self on a daily basis and choose what God has for us. And so when we do that, we are able to let our light shine. That's where the name comes from. So I'm very excited about it. I have 4 co-hosts this season. Would you like to hear who they are?
Yes.
Whitney Capps is one of my co-hosts. She's one of, I know, I love her. She's amazing. Lisa Whittle, also one of my co-hosts. Lindley Mandrell, who I mentioned earlier in the show, she is there. And my friend Tiffany Casey, who is one of our worship leaders at our church. So it's so much fun. We talk about all these things, hard things like just refining your schedule, getting your schedule in order, and how does that work? But also everything from that to, you know, sanctification over self-help. Why self-help is not the answer for us, but really it's dying to self and learning that God is fulfilling for every need in our life. And so we stop turning to bad habits and all the things that are not bringing us life, that are actually robbing us of life. So it's really fun.
That's great. Well, I'm excited for you. We're going to tune in. And I'd really appreciate you, Angie, joining me today and sharing your story with us.
Oh, you're so welcome. Thank you for having me. It's really fun. It's kind of therapeutic for me to be on the other side of the mic. Yes. I like it.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much.
Ladies, if you are a woman who leads in ministry, whether you're on staff or in a volunteer capacity, I would love to invite you to join me for the first National Women's Evangelism Conference in Alpharetta, Georgia on April 8th and 9th next year. I know this event will encourage and equip you to create a culture of evangelism in your ministry. Register today and make plans to join us. Visit namevangelism.com/women-conference or visit the link in the show notes for all the details. Can't wait to see you there.